This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
So here it is, Merry Christmas. Everybody's having fun arguing about politics over the dinner table. I'm Andrew Harrison, here with the last classic Bunker Gold of the year, Bunker Frankincense and Bunker Mail stuck in the post. From December 2020, here's Marie LeConte, Seth Tavo and Tom Peck with their hints and tips on how to win that Yuletide Barney with your Brexity uncle or your Corbynister auntie. God bless them and God help them, everyone.
Hello and welcome back to the Bunker Daily. I'm Marie LeConte. Much as it pains me to admit it as someone with Grinch-like tendencies, Christmas is now upon us. Presents are being bought, train tickets are tentatively being booked, and everyone is looking forward to spending their break eating themselves into oblivion. Still, and as much as we love them, our families can often be a bit tricky at Christmas. From the Boris-loving uncle to the Corbynista cousin, arguments about politics have been known to ruin the festive mood. How should we go about interacting with the relatives we don't always agree with? Should we stick to the mince pies and avoid political chats altogether? With me today to discuss this thorny and serious topic are journalist and historian Seth Tavo and independent sketch writer Tom Peck. Hello to you both.
Hello.
Hello.
So, what are your plans for Christmas? Seth, if you want to start.
Well, I'm getting as far away from my family as possible, so I'm going to join some friends in Spain. And I'm actually heading out there a little bit early to avoid strikes and various other things, mainly because I worked out that it's actually cheaper to travel around Spain than it is to heat a flat in London. No, you jest, but I've actually made the calculation. So I'm off to get pissed in Jerez on as much sherry as I can get my hands on.
I am unbelievably jealous. That Jenny words could not accurately describe how jealous I am. Tom, what about you?
Oh, for goodness sake. I mean, is it too late for me to book a flight? I must tell you, I'm not going to be getting pissed on sherry in Spain, much to my eternal disappointment. It's a proper buffet this year, in a sense. So Christmas Day itself is going to be me and the family and my brother and his family's house with fully four sets of in-laws, the whole lot. That will be quite tasty. Well, it will be tasty because his wife's a brilliant cook, but it will be tasty in many ways.
Well, actually, kind of on that note, Tom, so do your relatives come to you for Westminster chats, given your job? Like, are you the person they go to when they want to chat politics?
Yeah, they do, but not just my relatives, everyone. And I really, really struggle with it in a way because everybody talks to me about politics. And if we're completely honest, talking to people about politics can sometimes be quite boring. And I don't think of myself as a boring person. People may disagree, but I don't think of myself as a boring person. But so many times people like make small talk with me by like asking me about Brexit, and then I will reply and I can see their eyes glazing over and I can see them looking over my head for how to get away. And I'm always like, well, you started it, not me. I was just going to ask if you had a holiday booked or whatever. And that's the bit that I really struggle with. Yeah.
Oh, no, I get exactly the same. I think whenever my grandmother calls me, it's always, how are you? How's work? How is the Prime Minister? Like, I don't think we need to do this every single time, but yeah. Here we are. Seth, given your background, do you feel the need in this kind of conversation to go, actually, from a historical perspective, I think you'll find that
all the time, and not just for this. But no, I mean, I find exactly the same thing as both of you, just working in the area I work in. I spend a lot of time in old people's homes, interviewing nonagenarians and centenarians and, you know, people with interesting sort of political memories. And I find we spend a lot of time exchanging gossip because they're not out and about doing things anymore, but they're desperate to know what's going on in Westminster. And so they'll say, we'll tell you, no holds barred, exactly what we were doing in the 50s and 60s, provided you can give us the goss as to what's going on now. And it's a fair trade. It's great fun.
I know, that's quite fun. So, Gareth, do you have any rules on political chats at Christmas? Because I know, so my parents are divorced, and I know on my mum's side, who's Moroccan, I just cannot bring up the Western Sahara because I will get to lecture for 2 hours. And on my dad's side, so my dad is France's only remaining Emmanuel Macron fan. So I just can't really talk about Macron because he will just, again, launch himself into a, he is very misunderstood and actually he needs to be given the time to change France and shape it in his image. And it's absolutely tedious. So, like, do you have similar topics, both of you, on kind of, you know, stuff you do not bring up with your family? So, Seth, if you want to go first.
Yes, everything. I mean, the thing is, you have to realise that I am Swiss. And Switzerland is well known for being neutral in many things, including in World War II. And this, of course, like everything about Switzerland, is a giant fiction. So my relatives are very evenly split. There are the fascists and there are the communists. And it makes Christmas...
Here I am stuck in the middle with you.
Yep, that's exactly... Only liberal in the family, sort of with these sort of raging, howling arguments, which have been going on for several decades. I mean, they're not going to slow down.
So are you, as a result, the family disappointment? No, both sides going, for God's sake.
Yeah, I'm the weirdo who went off and emigrated to the UK.
Oh, God, Tom, do you have anything that's off limits in terms of your kind of Christmas political chats?
Well, I don't want to name names because my family are all pretty private, but there's one person in my family who is a proper Tory, and for a long time we have argued about politics for decades and decades and decades. But arguably the great thing about the shit that we've all lived through for as long as anyone can remember now is that because the Tories have now become so disgraceful and Brexit is so damaging, there's been much less arguing about politics because even this person in my family who sort of used to worship them, I think voted Green in 2019 just as sort of out of spite. So really, whilst we tried to avoid talking about politics because it would always turn into an argument, these days we kind of get on about everything because the Tories have done us a big favour in a sense because we don't have politics to argue about anymore because they are just so bad.
No, that's fair. And I guess, like, flipping this on its head, is there any topic that should not be brought up with you, like, if you're around? Because I know that, and hopefully it's calmed down now, but I was probably the family bore if anyone talked about Boris Johnson at any point because he'd get mentioned and I'd go, oh, it's going to, like, take a deep breath and then just rant for half an hour solid without breathing again. Is there anything, so actually, Tom, like, is there a topic you know you'll just be tedious about?
I suppose what happens if people bring up politics when they don't really want to talk about it, but they're just bringing it up because it's the sort of thing that they make small talk with me about, you might find that 20 minutes later, I'm still talking about the intricacies of Partygate or something when they really didn't care to begin with. They were just sort of asking for the sake of it.
And Seth, is there anything you feel incredibly strongly about that should never be brought up in your presence?
Yeah, I mean, like you, whenever the most evil politician in the universe is named, I am the definition of the bore of someone who cannot change their mind and will not change the subject. But obviously, this would be former Foreign Secretary David Owen, who is the most evil person on Earth.
If you'd given me 100 guesses, I would not have landed on David Owen.
I remember the first time I ever watched Return of the Jedi and Darth Vader's mask comes off and I expected Lord Owen's face to be underneath it.
I very sincerely think, I mean, obviously it's not up to me to do the commissioning, but I would do an entire bunker just with you to talk about David Owen.
A lot of stories.
What a weird, unexpected answer. I can't even remember what I was going to ask next. Tom, what's the worst argument you've ever got into at Christmas and was it about David Owen?
Strangely, I actually did get into an enormous argument over Christmas about David Owen once, but it was my old flatmate David
Owen.
He's
such a divisive figure.
it was my old flatmate David Owen who I actually think listens to this.
Sorry, Dave.
But anyway, all this is very family focused, right? And if I'm going to have an argument at Christmas, it's far more likely to be with friends than with family. I mean, I'm still mates with all my old schoolmates and some of them in the last 20 years have gone down very different pathways to me. I mean, I have a pretty close friend who I once clocked on the ITV News standing outside the Old Bailey chanting about Tommy Robinson. I've friends who like really do believe that Fauci should go to prison. And I've been on about 8 stag do's with a guy who regularly uses the word plandemic on his Instagram. And I mean, I always find these guys a bit of a challenge, right? And I try.
Are any of them single?
Yeah, well, they're not single actually. I always try and talk them around with reason, right, and try and make them see the other side, because I can usually try and get them to see things from the from another perspective. But I think it was our lad's Christmas meal in 2019 where I just called one of them a fucking halfwit and got in my Uber. And I'm not convinced that I've actually spoken to him since. And I think that was in 2019.
That's impressive work. So I guess the kind of last thing on this topic, so like, is there something you hope really does not come up this year, even with your friend Seth in Spain? So I'm still seething at that, because I know that... So I can tell that the Harry and Meghan documentary will come up at some point and I will be asked for my opinions on this. And I just really don't want to. I just really, really do not want to talk about Harry and Meghan at all whatsoever. So like, Seth, is there anything?
I mean, I hate football, so any conversation on that is easily avoided. What I'm really trying to get away from, I suppose, are the kinds
David
of...
David Owen.
Well, that too, clearly. But no, they're the kind of arguments that you would have at Christmas with your family. I mean, the old saying goes that you should never talk about religion or politics, and my family only talks about religion or politics. I mean, by way of an example, my late grandmother, between being an avid Nazi with a shrine to Hitler in her basement, was also a very keen and very devout Catholic. And the thing about Nazi Granny Tevel was that she used to... go on these strange rants where she was very, very obedient and very, very keen on deference and social order. But she wasn't actually that hot on the whole area of theology itself. So I once got into this huge argument with her over her belief that the late Pope John Paul II should be sanctified because of all the work that he did in the developing world to enable and encourage the spread of contraception. And it took about an hour and a half of arguing to finally bring her around to, no, he actually argued the exact opposite of this. At which point, she flips her argument and becomes just as equally strong in her views that he really should be sanctified because all the great work he did to limit contraception, the scourge of this stuff across the world. And there's no way of winning this sort of argument. So, you know, is it any wonder you leave the country, as I'm doing?
I've got nothing to say to that, really. Apart from, actually, could I spend Christmas at your family if you're not going? Because I feel like that actually sounds quite fun. Tom, is there anything you hope really doesn't come up apart from the plandemic or Fauci?
I mean, I would have been with you on Harry and Meghan, but I've avoided knowing anything about Harry and Meghan for the past however many years it's been. I think I muted the word Meghan on Twitter in the week of their wedding in 2018, and it's still there. So I actually really have honestly read nothing on the subject for years. But I was made to watch the first 3 hours of the documentary. And whilst this is quite tedious, I've upgraded like the sound system in my home. So like it was brilliant because I could just put it on for 3 hours and fanny around with these new speakers. And that means I did actually, because I had to watch it. So having now watched it, having been living in the Harry and Meghan desert for so long, I'm now drowning in new, fresh thoughts that I imagine people have been having for years and I just haven't read them. So I'm very happy if Harry and Meghan comes up. But what is there any subject that I would like to avoid? The thing is, I know this is boring, but me and my family don't win. I'm the most political person in my family by miles. The rest of us, everybody else is pretty normal. So they probably just try and avoid me, to be honest with you.
So I guess like looking more broadly and trying to help our listeners, I thought I'd ask you a couple of questions on how to deal with some annoying relatives that people may have. Seth, to start with, so how would you deal with a teenager who's just discovered socialism or libertarianism and thinks they have all the answers to everything?
I think there's nothing wrong with encouraging a bit of exploration of their own ideas and their shortcomings. So I would encourage them to look at that in practice. Take up an internship or volunteer for someone working in that campaign around that ideology, because there's no better way to get disillusioned with a politician than to work in close quarters with one 90% of the time.
That's very true. Tom, so how would you deal with someone who still identifies as a Brexiteer and now rails against the woke?
Well, I mean, I know dozens and dozens of people like that. I would say almost everybody I know is like that. And I always tend to fall back on the same opening gambit on that stuff, when I have done for years, which is that if you're very lucky in life, things becoming a bit fairer feels like you're being oppressed, doesn't it? But you're really not being oppressed. I know it's an old argument, but it is a classic. Recently, I found myself saying to a mate of mine, look, the value of your house is probably going to drop by 10% next year. And I know that you're very upset about it, but it has also more than doubled in the last 10. So you've sort of done okay, really. And if you think there are too many minority people or too many disabled people in various BBC dramas that you like, then you just have to try and understand that it's because people are trying to make things a little bit fairer. In the meantime, you're still white, you're still middle class, you're still going to be okay, just about.
No, that's very true. So, Seth, what should one do about the guilt-tripping virtue signaller who talks about their work for charity and their veganism and their refusal to take planes and what have you? Like, what do you do with someone
like that? There's nothing wrong with a bit of earnestness, and it can be fun to try and persuade people, I think healthy to persuade them to, you know, actually do some volunteering, for example, in a developing country where they may realise the limitations of their talents and their abilities and say, you know, just being very earnest and wanting to help make the world a better place doesn't mean that you're actually effective in all of these things. The other thing, however, is you can have a bit of fun pulling their chain by saying, you know, you're not really committed enough in the grand scheme of things. You know, you haven't given more than 250 days a year to charitable work. What kind of a virtue signaller are you? And have a bit of fun there if you feel so inclined.
I really enjoy that your answer to most of these questions is give very passive-aggressive career advice.
Yeah.
Which is niche, but, you know, if it works, it works. Tom, is there anything a person can do against the relative who always tries to turn everything into an argument?
Well, the only solution there is not to drink. It's easy to avoid an argument when you're sober, but by the third glass of wine, like, there's no doubt, is there, that you are going to be going in, aren't you? But the problem that worries me is that I think that that person in my family possibly is me. And it's not because I'm argumentative. I really don't think I am argumentative, but it's happened to me so many times. I'll be with people who say, all of my family more or less, especially one half of it, who just say the Tories are terrible, Boris Johnson's a scumbag and so on. And I don't want to shock anyone, but that's kind of my view as well. But sometimes I think they've genuinely think they can have gone a bit too far. And so, for example, sometimes I'll find myself saying to my family, well, actually, some of the stuff that the Conservatives did in the pandemic, they did quite well on. Some of the things they got right. And then I get told, oh, well, you love the Tories then, do you? Oh, right, oh, fine. Well, you've kept that quiet. You don't write that in your columns, do you? And then you sort of think, well, am I the one being contrarian here? And am I the one trying to start an argument? Or is it? And then they get even more annoyed because they're all very, very, very intelligent. But on the subject of politics, I probably just have more knowledge than them because it is my job. And then that puts their gander up because they can feel that they're losing the argument and they don't ever want to lose an argument to me. So I worry that actually the row starter is me, even though I'm not one. So perhaps the answer to your question is just to stay away from me at Christmas, which frankly is fine by me as well.
Well, at the risk of starting an argument, I have to disagree with you on the point about avoiding drunkenness as a way of avoiding arguments. Again, David Owen is someone who can start arguments stone cold sober.
It's actually, and I'm quite jealous. So I think French Christmases are a lot less boozy than British ones. And I think that's something I'd not really realised until I moved here. But also I think it's going back home for Christmas every year and still being on Twitter, spending my day on Twitter, because obviously I'm just at home and there's nothing to do. And you sort of, you know, seeing people having their first mimosa at 8, 9 a.m. for Scottish friends and maybe, you know, 10 or 11 for English friends. You know, and meanwhile in France, that we will have a glass of fizz at 7 before dinner. Then we will have dinner and probably split, you know, a bottle of wine for 3 or 4 people. And then that's it. Maybe have one last drink after dinner, but that's literally it. And it is generally a very weird and unique experience to watch my entire Twitter timeline get steadily drunker and drunker while I'm just like, I just had coffee because it's 3 p.m.
But isn't that French versus British drinking habits writ large, in that France has a far healthier drinking culture of a moderate amounts at various points of the day? But I think compared to the binge drinking culture we have in the UK, where we are stone cold sober 6 days of the week and we stack it all away in one day of the week. But Christmas is like that times 10.
It is, and I slightly worry that if I end up meeting someone and kind of having to do a British Christmas, I will just die. Like, I will either die or sort of, like, you know, get naked and start crying at 1 p.m. because I just cannot handle that level of constant drinking.
That happens a fair bit in Parliament.
I'm trying to think, like, the glory days for the Peck family Christmas was maybe like 20 years ago. I've got one brother and I've got two cousins and we're all more or less the same age. And that was in the years when we were like in our early 20s and we were all students, and then we would come back and get together at Christmas and somebody else would have discovered some other ridiculous drinking game. I mean, there was one year when the four of us just retreated into the back room on Christmas Day and played that, you know, that hour of power thing where you have to do a shot every minute for an hour.
And then we call that centurion.
Then we all rolled back into the living room where my mama and my auntie and uncle were like making polite chat, having just had us abandon them for an hour. And then none of us were awake for, we timed the hour of power to make sure we were back in the living room for the Only Fools and Horses Christmas special. And then nobody was awake for within 20 minutes of it.
But to do the historian shtick and just look at actually how modern our ideas of Christmas, I mean, it's a totally invented tradition, really, from the Victorian age in its modern form. You know, the Puritans actually banned it during Cromwell's time. And it very much is something that was popularised, you know, in the wake of Prince Albert, by Charles Dickens. Charles Dickens, interestingly enough, through the same long short story in A Christmas Carol, not only is the creator of the modern idea of Christmas, he's also the founder of science fiction, arguably, because it's the first time travel story.
Oh, that is a very fun fact.
So if you want to do a thoroughly Christmassy thing, cosplay in a sci-fi environment.
That's all I've ever wanted. So I guess to end this on a kind of like final positive note, like what is actually the thing you usually end up enjoying the most about the Christmas break? Well, I was going to say Christmas break with your family, but obviously some of us have managed to escape. Seth, actually, like, is this your first time kind of escaping somewhere else for Christmas or no? In that case, what is your favourite bit of... Yeah, I can't believe I'm asking this as a question. What is your favourite bit of going to a sunnier country with your friends to get drunk while everyone is having a bit of a boring time?
Oh, that's lovely. That's lovely. Yeah. No, I
mean, nothing else to it, is there? Yeah. Fine. Well, Tom, what do you like about staying in England and seeing your family for Christmas?
Well, my family were older than they used to be, and I know I was just talking about this, but in the old days, Christmas used to be really properly glorious. Like, I used to absolutely love it. I mean, I remember when me and my brother and my cousins were all in our 20s, it was a proper riot, and so I don't think it's ever got better since then.
My thing is so much milder compared to that because my parents are divorced and my mum's Moroccan, so doesn't really care about Christmas. And there is one year a few years ago where I think we were finally sort of like all adults and she was like, actually, do you guys really care about doing a traditional Christmas in any way? And my brother and I were like, absolutely not. We just made a lasagna and got tanked on champagne, the three of us. And actually I was like, this is really fun. This is all I want from Christmas. And with that, I think we're done. Thank you so much to you both and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you for having me. Absolute pleasure. Merry Christmas.
And if you enjoyed this podcast, you can back us on Patreon so we can keep making them. There's a link in the show notes or just search Bunker Patreon Podcast. This is Marie LeConte. Thanks for joining me in the bunker.
The Bunker was presented by Marie LeConte with Seth Tevo and Tom Peck. Audio productions from me, Robin Leeburn, the producers Alex Reese and Jack Gerbertson. Assistant production by Kasia Tomashevich. Lead producer is Jacob Jarvis, group editor Andrew Harrison, and theme tunes by Kenny Dickinson. The Bunker is a Podmasters production.